Mayo, I have something new this week from Apple to tell you about.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I have the new Apple Maps experience where I live.
Whoa.
Yeah, I didn't have to buy it or anything. It's just if you use an iPhone. I'll tell you what this. There was back in June, May even, there was a Reddit link going around that someone had sent me to say that – it might have been June, like after the betas were out, but someone saying that Texas, Louisiana, and then parts of Mississippi where I live – had the new Apple Maps, and you could tell by zooming way out, and you could just see like where all the green is for trees, that level of detail, that's the new Maps experience. And the person had a screenshot and everything, I think. And I put it on my reading list to like look at that and like see if I had that experience. And because I thought maybe I wouldn't be able to tell, like, just at a glance. And I finally got around like a few weeks ago to read the Reddit post that people had sent me. And try to recreate it myself. Like, do I get the new Maps experience or not? And I couldn't figure it out. I was like, I can't tell from what this person posted, and I can't see it on my phone, so I'm just not going to worry about it. And then it's like those three areas, you know, two states and half of another state, it actually rolled out to everybody like several weeks later, like over a month later. But sure enough, like I was just driving down the road. And we'd had a tip that morning in the 9to5 Mac tip box that said, you know, the same thing. These three areas have the new maps. And I saw that, but I didn't go and verify because I thought this is just someone tipping an old story. You know, a few weeks ago, someone had seen it too. But then after I had dropped my kids off for daycare and school, I was going back home and just like the blank map open where, you know, shows where you are. And it was so detailed. And I got really excited because like, this is the new maps. And that's what I've got. And then after, I'd say a week of using it, then I got the notification from Apple that says like, there's a new Maps experience in your area where more details and everything. And that's all it says. And when you tap it, it just launches the Maps app. But this is based on where Apple had those vans driving all over the country for, you know, years. And then they rewrite their own map from scratch without licensing it from TomTom or whoever. And the idea there is that you can report an issue and then you'll have that issue fixed within maybe a day versus a month of having to go through their partner and license a fix, you know.
Or even longer, because I think Apple would basically send the report of problems along to their provider, yeah, and then the Apple Maps data source wouldn't be updated until TomTom updated their data source. And mm-hmm. I think TomTom would like bundle it on like even almost like a 90-day cycle sometimes. So the problems could get sat around for ages, assuming they actually got addressed. So like a human could actually fix the problem, but it wouldn't roll out for, you know, up to 3 months sometimes. And
right
now that Apple controls its own data sources, it should be able to be much more responsive and rapid in deploying the fixes.
Yeah. And I think the other benefit here will be that maybe in the future, Apple would have offline maps that you can download because they're not licensing it from TomTom or whoever. They have their own maps. They can just let, you know, if they want to ever do the feature, they can let you download it without paying TomTom a huge sum of money for their licensing fees in addition to what they already pay. And that's a Google Maps feature because Google has their own maps. And so they can allow that. Lots of GPS apps, you know, like TomTom have the feature, but Apple hasn't been able to do it yet without paying another company a lot of money. But once their map is like all across the US, which is planned by the end of this year, then that'll probably be a priority for like a point update or like iOS 14, I'd have to imagine.
Yeah, I 100% expect that's where they're going, because the whole, you know, owning your own data sources gives you so much more flexibility in what you can do. Obviously, they're starting to do the Street View, you know, clone look around now in a few cities, and the Apple implementation is very good, but obviously that's an initiative that's only just starting and is only coming to a few cities this year. And so it's going to be a while before it has the ubiquity of, you know, Street View, which Google Maps has almost the entire world photographed at some at some level now.
Yeah, and that's,
people get a bit confused because they see the Apple Maps imagery cars running around like Johannesburg or Britain or Canada and all of these places. You know, and you can go on that website and see the image collection schedule when they're coming around. Mm-hmm. And everyone sees those and immediately thinks of the look around feature. That is not necessarily what those images are going to be used for anytime soon, because right, those cars predominantly exist just to make the map data and verify. Apple fuses aerial data, which is how they, on the new map, how they get such accurate of like the greeneries, basically. They they take it straight off the aerial shots and then, you know, interpolate it into the flat map look. And that's how they use the aerials to get like the outlines of the pools or the baseball field and stuff like that. And then the roads, they combine the aerial data with the, because the aerial data could be, you know, a year, 2 years old. They can fuse that with the car data coming from the vans that are running around. And yes, those cars are taking photos, but those photos are primarily taken and stored for use by Apple's team or of contractors who are actually making the map. Because then if somebody reports a problem and says, oh, this shop is actually here and you haven't got a list on your map, they can bring up all the photos that the van took and like check that it's actually there and then make the change. That's predominantly what those cars and the current vans are doing. It's not like, oh, if you see, because there are loads of them running around Britain at the moment, but you know, we're unlikely to get look around for, you know, at least another year. We're not going to get the, you know, the new map detail for at least another year at this point. So that's just a little disclaimer on whether if you see an Apple Maps car running around, it probably doesn't mean you're getting look around anytime soon.
Yeah. And I never saw one of the vans in person myself. I've seen all the photos, you know, people send us the photos every time they're in the area. But I did see, I guess, the largest city near me on the schedule, you know, several years ago. And then now it's delivered. And I really like the level of detail now, because there's, I mean, all the greeny, like you mentioned, like it is detailed and it's accurate from what I can tell. I don't notice any like improvements to just the quality of like navigation, because there weren't problems that I had. So I can't say this was a problem and now it's fixed. But you know, when I see an issue, I'll report it, and then I can see how, you know, long the turnaround time is. But I do get the 3D feature. You know, like you said, it's not connected to look around the street view clone, but I do get 3D where you can go from 2D to 3D on the map, and then all the buildings
They're like the extrusions of the building plots, basically. So it's like the orange blocks that you see when you like tilt the map.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's even a new shopping center near my home where like, it was not on the old map, I don't believe. And now it's certainly there, and it's got like the road, like the lanes and everything around that shopping center are all accurate. The greenery, like I live near a golf course, and you can see, like different shades of green on the golf course. And then you can see the mounds, like the dirt mounds around the golf course where the sand is and where the water is and where all like the lanes are where the golf carts can drive around. So that's really nice. And then I live on the Gulf Coast of Mississippi. So I'm like 5 minutes from the beach, and there's lots of like water inlets too. And all of those are super specific, like the shape of those and everything. So, visually it's night and day. And it's really impressive. And just getting the feature where, you know, you can do 3D view, that used to be limited for me to when I traveled to a big city in my car. And I've never seen it around town, and now it's everywhere. But the funny thing is, because it's Texas and it's Louisiana, and then it's like the top of Louisiana, I think that turns into like the middle of Mississippi, is where it cuts off. So it is like South Mississippi, like the bottom half of Mississippi. And then it also has a hard cutoff of the edge of Mississippi. And so for a lot of people around where I live, they might commute to Alabama, because there's Mobile, Alabama, and it's a big town. Lots of jobs there. And so if you commute, you've got the new maps on like around your home, but not, you know, on like a half your commute to where you go until they have the rest of the area finished. And I will also say, I was surprised that this happened, because there are so many parts of the country. I mean, just look at the Apple maps and like zoom way out and look at the greenery, and it's like, you know, the California area. And now like this, like two and a half state region. And my theory in that is maybe it's just there are fewer roads and vaster areas of greenery, you know, from here to Texas. And so it was, something you could wrap up sooner, not even based on like how soon did you capture the data, but like just process it and it's done, because there's just less ground to cover. Like I imagine detailing, you know, we're seeing a few reports of it's happening also in the north, in New England area. And that's gotta be pretty complex, because it's like population density is a lot there.
Yeah, and I assume Apple is doing a lot of like regression testing, where they're having, again, probably contractors check all of the tiles that are being changed to make sure, you know, stuff isn't actually getting lost by their wayside or getting worse, right? So there's probably a lot of QA that's going along. It would be a really bad like news headline if it's like Apple rolls out the new map and it's, you know, gives them and it's worse, and it goes back to the it just reinforces the 2012 Apple Maps fear.
Is that iOS 6 era?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which a lot of people still think of, right, when they think of Apple Maps. It's just hard to shake that reputation.
Yep. So I've got the new maps. That's cool.
One other thing on maps, sure. That is new to iOS 13 is that, and actually I'm finding really good, is in the transit modes, or in like the UK it's called transport, but the transit map, now when you click on like train stations, and you can actually get live times. They crawl the the data feeds for a lot of places now, and you get, because you could always do like a route before where you could map by transit and go via the train or whatever, but now a lot of the stations and the buses and stuff, they can, if they support it, you can see where the bus is. Like literally you can follow the bus that knows the location. And that's only in a few places, but more widely it will just have like the actual up-to-date bus times and train times. So for instance, in London, all of the London Underground stations now, as well as having like the estimated schedule times, that you can dive directly in it, and it will tell you if the next train is on time, if it's delayed, if it's 5 minutes behind, if it's still on track. Like, and you can basically get like the majority of what you would get from a dedicated like a London Underground app just built into the Maps app, and you just route from station to station, and it has the live departure times and destinations, everything. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, so without even having the new maps experience in terms of the map data, then there's still benefits around the world. So that's cool.
Yep.
This week we have new betas for most of Apple's platforms. There's beta 7 for iOS 13 and iPad OS 13, tvOS 13, and watchOS 6. The interesting thing here is that macOS Catalina has been stuck on beta 5 since July 31st. And so we've had two rounds of betas so far as of this recording. There's been no August update to macOS Catalina, which arguably needs like the most work, build to build. I don't know what to make of that, but we wait for
Well,
that.
What I would say is Catalina, is unlikely to be shipping in September, right? Okay. Like they ship the macOS releases later. We've seen it happen in October before. Based on the current, I think the lack of the current betas here, it heavily implies that update will probably come later again, maybe the start of October, maybe the end of October, that kind of time frame. And as they wrap up the iOS release, then they'll go back and finish off some Catalina betas again. Like the iOS 13 has to ship in September because of the new iPhone lineup. And watchOS is presumably coming new watches or just connected to iOS 13 in general by September. So those things have more fixed schedules where macOS Catalina can be more hand wavy and whatever. So I think it's probably pretty likely that we're going to have one of those years where iOS 13 comes out in the middle of September, and then the macOS update is significantly more delayed, like more than a week, which is what Mojave was. So it'll be maybe later October.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Like even with updates that require the same software versions across platforms for features like iCloud Drive, or in this case the new reminders feature, and in the past also like Apple Notes, like that hasn't stopped them from releasing the most popular platform updates first and then the Mac later. So it makes sense. I am with you on that one. We do see a few new things in this particular beta update. Let's see. So on the Apple Watch, the change is that the Find Friends icon or app, which is like the Find My Friends app from the iPhone on the Apple Watch, it's changed to Find People, and it has a new icon to match the Find My app on the iPhone and iPad from iOS 13. And that's because they merged Find My iPhone and Find My Friends into Find My in an app that's one app but shows you both friends and devices. But there's never been device tracking on the Apple Watch, so they couldn't – well, they could. They didn't call it Find My. They just used the icon of Find My in a circle and called it Find People, and they didn't change the app really. Like maybe it looks a little bit different, but it's the same features. Find My is a bad name, but the inconsistency is also weird.
Yeah, I'd rather Find My didn't exist and was called something else, but I feel like the watch app should just be called Find My.
Because yeah. Even if you don't, stupid. Yeah, even if you like, so you could do two things. You could add device tracking too and call it Find My, or you can just call it Find My and it only supports people like it always has.
Yeah. I mean, look at most of the other Apple apps. Like, they're not perfect feature one-to-one to what the iPhone can offer. Like, Maps on the iPhone has loads more features than Maps on the watch does. Like,
yes.
All that transit stuff I just mentioned is not on the watch, for instance. And they don't call it like, you know, only Maps navigation or whatever. Yeah. They just call it Maps because that's what it is. And it has the Find My icon now. They could just call it Find My. And even on the watch, you don't even see the app name that often. Like,
it's
now, I checked it out by going to the list view on the home screen. But, you know, normally I'm in a honeycomb mode, the grid mode, and I never see the app labels anyway. So it's not a huge deal, but I was like, oh, it's got the Find My icon. And then I looked at the list view and was like, find people? Okay.
Yeah,
like,
find.
Watch, I'm just finding some people. Like, it's just a weird name, but.
Yeah, Find My is a round rect. Find people is a circle. You also see it in the dock view. So if it's like a recently opened app or you favorite it in your dock, then you see the label there. There is one improvement here that's positive to report, though, which is something that I know a Happy Hour listener, Ian Blackburn, asked about, which is if you ask Siri to find a person who you're connected to with Find Friends, in the past, it would fail. You could not do that. So the easiest thing to do is say, Siri, open Find Friends, or now Find People, and hope that the person you're asking about is like the top person so that you can see it at a glance without interacting with the app. Now you can ask Siri if you can find that person, and it will open the app and show you that person. So that's a change that's been long overdue. And I've heard from so many people that the biggest thing they don't like about the merge of Find My iPhone and Find Friends into Find My on iOS specifically is the Find Friends widget goes away, because there was never a widget for finding devices. It was just a widget for finding friends. And I've used that widget before. It's really useful. And so now that's gone, I think on the Mac as well, because this is the same situation. Or maybe it's on the Mac. I don't know. But anyway, on iOS and iPad.
Well, the Mac never had an app, right? Oh, no. The Mac has an app now. It has the Find My app.
Yeah, it only had a widget. And so now it has a full app. So I'm not sure if the widget lives on or not. My guess is it's probably gone there too, and it's just all in the app now. But on iOS and iPadOS, I especially get it, especially on the iPad, where now you can have, like, if you wanted that to be on your home screen, you know, you could have where your partner is or where your kids are on the home screen, and they need to bring that widget back. I imagine they will. This is one of the things that I'm seeing enough readers complain about and surface to us that surely, like, when iOS 13 and iPadOS 13 are released to the masses, this will be one of those things that Apple support has to deal with. And the easiest thing will be to do is just to fix it and add a widget, even if it's just people. They call it the Find People widget.
The Find People widget.
And on the, let's see, on the Apple TV, on TV 13 beta 7, it now is the feature where if you have the TV app in your top row, your dock on the Apple TV, it's a feature that they showed at WWDC is coming to the update that hasn't been there until this week, where it will show you auto playing trailers behind your app icons and like on the top shelf area where there's like a big screen view. There's no sound until you swipe up, and then you can see like a full screen of the trailer play out, and it's for movies and TV shows.
And there's like a button to go straight to that piece of content in the app, right from the home.
Right. So it's like very promotional, and it's very immersive because it is like full screen. You know, even when it's just your app icons are like overlaid, it's still like it's your whole TV screen at least, and not like a small box. But I'm not sure I love it because. It's like, I just kept seeing trailers for movies I don't want to buy or like rent. And I have a large iTunes library and it showed me trailers for things that are in my library, which I actually enjoyed because it was like, you might want to watch this. It was like a movie in your library, but it was only showing it because they're promoting it on the store too. It'll make more sense, I think, when like, if they ever did it as just TV Plus content, I think. But, and now they're just testing it with iTunes store content. But even so, like, you just don't want to see auto playing videos, even without sound, as like your, you know, wallpaper basically is like a screensaver for your wallpaper if it's not content that you want. And it was for like TV shows and movies that I don't want. I couldn't turn it off. You can turn off the autoplay video part of it through accessibility in the motion settings, but it just makes a slideshow instead of a movie trailers. So, no.
Yeah, good. They just need to focus the TV app in more on stuff that you own or pay for so you can actually watch. And then, like, if it only featured your up next queue, it'd be fine, right? Like, mm-hmm. oh, I can actually go and watch this right now. Or if you subscribe to Apple TV Plus and HBO channels and three Apple TV channels, and it only showed you that stuff, oh, it'd be all right. But when they just start throwing, you know, the entire iTunes catalog at you, it's like, you know, I don't want this advertising essentially to be so prominent.
Yeah, especially for a $200 box.
So, yeah, because if you imagine, like, obviously this new, like, panoramic top shelf experience is available to all apps. They can adopt it if they want to. And if you imagine, like, Netflix updating to support this, it would actually be, you know, more, it would be a better experience, because in Netflix, you're paying once, right? And you get everything. Like, isn't you, when you go into the Netflix app, you don't see stuff that you don't own. So if you have Netflix as your, like, number one app and you get mm-hmm. the full screen top shelf experience, you're like, oh, that's actually something I can go watch right now. It's like, mm-hmm. that's, you know, it's just, it just becomes like a quick action shortcut, no problem. But with the TV app as it stands, it shows you loads of stuff that, you know, you have to pay extra for.
So with that being said, then when TV Plus comes out later this year from Apple as their video service, if you are a subscriber and they only show TV Plus content because they really want you to watch it and they don't care as much about the iTunes movies and TV store, then maybe I'll like it better because then it'll be, like you said, it's all actionable without paying more money. You've already paid. This is what you, you know, this gets you more out of the service that you're paying for. That would feel better. The iTunes movies and TV shows apps, they don't have this feature. They still have the queue or, you know, purchased and then top selling movies and TV shows. The music app from the first beta of tvOS has had its own experience where it has a full screen background too, like that, and it promotes music videos without any, doesn't do anything auto playing, I don't think. It's just like, it's easy way to get to certain playlists and videos. So it's,
yeah, and Apple Arcade has one that features it, the games, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I keep that in a folder because it's just not active yet, but yeah, good point. On iOS, do I see anything interesting? It's, I think everything that's been missing so far, like, that was there before, but it's missing now, like, shortcuts automation, share ETA,
shared folders
for iCloud, all those things that were there, but then taken out, they're still gone. And we don't know when to expect them, whether it's going to be the GM or point update or, you know, when, or future.
Yeah, the beta 7 release just mostly seemed to be like, you know, fixing out some bugs and stuff. Like the previous beta had a weird appearance for the folders and stuff where the blur effect was a bit, you know, balked, and now that's been put back to normal again now, so it looks all nice. Mm-hmm. And the wallpaper dimming's back and working. It's just like the, you know, we're on the tune-up cycle now for iOS.
Yep.
Although there was that, you know, that kind of asset leak, which is quite funny.
Yeah, so what the asset leak is that we've got the link from 9to5Mac in the show notes, but someone else had found that they changed the assets for, like, the setup screen when you reinstall, like, or install iOS 13 from scratch, I suppose, or, like, you know, on a new device. What you see at first, they have
display zooms.
Yeah, they have little previews of the home screen and, like, what the sizes of the icons are and everything. Exactly. So that just on its own has the home screen by default, and which includes the calendar, and they always sync the calendar date to the date of the keynote. And so it says Tuesday 10, and you can infer from that Tuesday, September 10, which we all already think will be the iPhone 11 event. And that being included, I think, like, with a do not release or wait for release.
Yeah, the file's called, like, hold for release.
Yeah, hold for release. And it's probably not like a teaser Easter egg, you know, throw you off the trail kind of thing, red herring. Because the date, you know, it's just like you would already have guessed that to be the date. And so it's like one more thing until, you know, some prominent reporter says that is also, that's the date based on sources, or Apple, you know, officially announces that's the date. So. Mark your calendars, September the 10th. That's an interesting one for me because I've got a trip planned that weekend, and in the middle of that week, knowing it's the iPhone event, and what it is one of my top favorite bands, Angels and Airwaves, they're going on their first tour in 7 years, and one of the dates is in Orlando, Florida. And I've got family there, and I can, you know, have free stay there for the week and then go and see the show without having to, like, travel to it and then travel back home with a big thing. And I planned for it. Like, yeah, I'll work normal, you know, in the daytime, and like in the evening when the concert happens, I'll go out for the evening to the concert and it won't be disruptive. It'll only be an issue if there's like, you know, a surprise invitation to the event, which I don't think would happen anyway, but, yeah. and also I'd plan like a, just to be careful Saturday, concert, attend the concert in, Austin. And then just like with consulting everybody, it's like family and friends that were going to go with me. It's like, yeah, let's just do one this year. So, we'll see what happens with that. Some drama. But yeah, got to the new betas, and we didn't know that there was going to be any coming today until they, you know, right before they happened. So, that's some cool stuff to talk about. I do want to say one more thing about TVS before we change any subject here. The, TVS 13 picture in picture experience, we discussed that when it first was discovered, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is how it works. Something I didn't know then, I just hadn't played with it enough because it was like maybe like that day we saw that it was there. I got to like, you know, first try of it, not really know like everything about it. I did not realize that you can do dual playback of shows. So like whenever you pip, I guess I knew that you could go around the TV app and have the video play there or on the home screen, but it's also, it's also on the, like video on video, which was, we probably didn't know. But if you have captions turned on, you can see what's being said on both. It's a very small pip, and I don't think you can make it any bigger. But if you've got a big enough TV, like maybe like 55 plus, and you're close, you can see what's being said on both of the videos. And you
so the app and the picture-in-picture window can both play video at the same time.
Yep.
Which is that's different to how iOS works.
That is true.
Yeah. Because on the iPad, you can have a pip, but you can't. Like, if you have a pip running, I always have like BBC iPlayer in a pip or whatever, and then you go on Safari and you want to play a video in Safari, it will pause the picture in picture video. So it's kind of interesting that TVS actually lets you run both together.
Yeah, and that's totally what people want, because that's like classic picture in picture from TV sets that support that feature. Like, I think even my TV, you can have like different modes where there's picture in picture. That's cool. You can also like switch out the video really easily. There's like a toggle for that. So, the way I was trying it was my son was watching Sesame Street and I was just experimenting. And then I pulled up the Grinch and you could switch back and forth to those, which is really neat. And then of course the caption thing impressed me because you can't hear both. You only hear the biggest video that's playing the front video, but, You can do captions if you want to try and maybe see what's happening on the other one too. It would be neat if you could do like speakers in your TV for the main one, and then like, you know, Bluetooth audio for the secondary one if you really wanted to share your TV like that.
I think that kind of stuff would require more like of a overhaul, because the picture in picture at the moment is more casual, just like multitasking around, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if they were going to do like a proper TV picture in picture, it would be kind of like what the ESPN app can do, where you have like four videos, you know, one in each corner, and then you can mix and match and move around. Like, that's not what TVS 13 is offering. It's a much more, you know, it's basically like the iPad experience, right? Like, and if
mostly,
they were going to do a more fully fledged TV picture in picture multitasking thing, then yeah, the kind of, you know, outputting different speakers and stuff would probably be in there. But as it is, it's mainly meant for like, you're watching something, but you might want to go browse somewhere else and then maybe change back to it. So you just keep it like bobbing along in the corner.
Yeah, there is the difference between touchscreen where you tap and drag or click and drag on the Mac to move the pip from window to window and optionally resize it. There's no resizing, but there is a weird UI for making go to the top left, top right, bottom left, bottom right, just by clicking through. And there's like an icon that looks like the old before Mission Control, you know. What that was called on the Mac. So yeah, it's cool. And then last thing on TV for the week is we got the first trailer for the morning show. So we've seen a trailer already for an Apple TV Plus original series for All Mankind at WWDC. But before that, there was the March event where they showed like a big montage trailer for like different clips and you know, it's very dramatic for like everything that's
like
playing.
A dozen different shows.
Right. Now we've got one dedicated trailer for the morning show, plus a bunch of social media accounts for that too.
Yeah, and the morning show trailer doesn't really show like a clip from the episode, from an episode. It's still a kind of like featurette type of thing, because they're kind of going through the set and nobody's there, and you just hear like dubovers or voiceovers from the actors saying stuff. But it's obviously more than we've had yet for the morning show, and it looks quite compelling. Like, I'm quite interested in it, you know. And again, it just says coming this fall, so it's going to be one of their, you know, debut lineup, right? Which I think most of what they showed him, I think all the stuff that was in the teaser trailer for March is what they plan to have out this year, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
And unless over the summer they hit roadblocks or something that made it was not going to happen, that's different. But that was definitely their plan, that the dozen or so shows that were shown in March were definitely, this is our launch lineup, right? In March they didn't have, you know, proper trailers to show, but then by June they had For All Mankind, and that show, they finished season one entirely already, and I believe they're already working on season two. For All Mankind, the morning show is, I don't think it's been renewed yet, or at least we haven't heard that they're doing more than season one at the moment. But obviously that's now in the can.
Yeah, I know a lot of these shows that you know we were doing in the original, the reporting on these originally, you know, months ago, years ago, even in some cases, it was like it's been signed for two seasons up front. You know, so that might be one of those cases, and that's a big star show, so that's going to be an important one for Apple. Yeah, so they've got also, in addition to just releasing the trailer, which they put in the Apple TV app as like a row, and in the weekly email for what to watch on Apple TV this week, but you can't really watch the show, just the trailer.
And on the homepage.
Yeah, and on the homepage, that's right. A lot of promotion for that. They also have a Twitter account for the show and a Facebook page, I believe.
Instagram.
An Instagram page. And they changed the Apple TV YouTube channel, which is pretty new anyway. But it used to be stuff on Apple TV, like here's a movie trailer for something from a long time ago.
They would even have like a person go to the red carpet and do interviews with the celebrities and stuff.
Right. And all of that,
you know, like all those, you know, like E or whatever, all those entertainment channels, they do the dumb games and play around with the actors and stuff and ask about the film. Like for a while, that's what the Apple TV YouTube channel was. It was like, they never really had a personality attached to the thing. It was kind of like title card of question, and then you'd see like a, you know, a personless hand holding the mic while the actor answered. But that's where they were going for it for a while, and now it doesn't seem to be happening anymore.
Yeah, now it's all TV Plus content, right? Like or promotional stuff for that, at least. So
I don't think their initial run at doing the proper celebrity actor style interview stuff really worked, because all of those videos had relatively no views. They were like 1,000 views per video or whatever, and it was like, it wasn't going off. And then they have these, their For All Mankind trailer has like 12 million views. Like, it's just like a wild difference.
What do you expect from the channel in general? Yeah.
Yeah, and I believe Apple obviously pays for advertising for those videos as well, which just helps to boost the view count. If you're still using one of the big wireless providers in 2019, have you asked yourself, what exactly is it that you're paying for? Between retail stores, inflated prices, and hidden fees, it all adds up. Enter Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile provides the same premium network coverage at a fraction of the cost, because everything is done online. Mint Mobile saves on the overhead of retail locations and passes those savings on to you. Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down, starting at $15 a month. Every plan comes with unlimited nationwide talk and text. And you can stop paying for unlimited data that you'll never use. Choose plans with 3, 8, or 12 gigabytes of high-speed 4G LTE data. Zach's been trying out a Mint Mobile SIM, so what do you think?
Yeah, so Mint Mobile has been excellent. I just received my SIM card in the mail, and you just pop it out, and it has the three different sizes that you might need for different devices, and I use the smallest size for my device. And the service works excellent in my iPhone. It's really nice, and it's great to be able to know what you're going to pay and to know how much data you have. And the data plans are a really good value, and the ability to log on and see how much data you have left and even add more data if you need to is really useful. So I love Mint Mobile. Check it out.
Keep your same phone and phone number, ditch your old wireless bill, and start saving with Mint Mobile. To get your new wireless plan starting at $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/happyhour. That's mintmobile.com/happyhour. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/happyhour.
All right, Mayo, in addition to the iPhone 11 event, you know, expectation being, you know, more than ever that September 10th will be the date, there's some new rumors about iPhone 11 too, including maybe what we can call it. What's the story there?
Yeah, mostly name rumors, right? Like a anonymous Twitter account, which normally we discard all anonymous Twitter accounts because they're all just making stuff up. But this one's special in that it has a very good track record of the last year of getting stuff right. It's an account called CoinX, and before, in the run-up to the iPhone XS, it got the iPhone XS, iPhone XS Max, and iPhone XR names correctly. It even got details like the weight of the XS Max, and it got the asymmetric speaker holes where it's like 6 and 4, all of that stuff. You know, the kind of details that rarely leak out in other places. This completely anonymous Twitter account was just tweeting it, you know, a week, 2 weeks before the event actually happened, and we know for sure. So that it became on our radar. Then we obviously covered some of the stories, you know, last year, and going through into 2019, it's had a few leaks about like the iPad lineup. So in March, when there was the, oh, is it going to be a 10.5-inch iPad? Is it going to be a 10.2-inch iPad? And obviously the iPad Air came out, which was the 10.5-inch one. The CoinX account said, yes, the 10.5-inch iPad is coming out, but so is the 10.2-inch coming later. And if you fast forward a few months, it definitely seems like there's going to be a 10.2-inch iPad very, very soon. So it's all looking rosy, right, on terms of the track record. And so this week it tweeted, Pro for iPhone? Crazy naming schemes over the past few years, which is obviously like a rhetorical way of suggesting that the names of the new iPhone will include the word Pro. We've also seen a few case makers double down these bets, and you know, case makers get information from the supply chain to try and get the most accurate branding and dimensions and everything for their cases ready to go for launch. You know, sometimes they get it wrong. Like in the iPhone in 2017, the iPhone X, everyone thought it was going to be called the iPhone 8, right? Right up until the release. And so you had a lot of cases that shipped, like the first batch of cases all shipped saying compatible with iPhone 8. And then there were really iPhone 10 cases. So, you know, it's not foolproof, but we've definitely seen evidence of case makers betting on the Pro names as well. And what it seems like it's going to be is iPhone 11 will be the name of the XR. Or the new XR, right?
Replacement.
Which is going to get dual cameras and, you know, upgraded specs and stuff like that. And then the XS and the XS Max can be called iPhone 11 Pro. And the Max might even be called iPhone 11 Pro Max. But that one's less sure of. But it seems like the non-OLED iPhone is just going to be called iPhone 11. And then the OLED models are going to be called iPhone 11 Pro. Mm-hmm. So keeping the name, keeping the numbering scheme going up, but also adding the Pro designation now rather than like S and R, you've got 11 and 11 Pro. What do you think about those kind of names?
I think it's one of the most reasonable naming schemes, if they do that, they've had in a while. It is a reorganization of how you classify the phones. You've had multiple phones for several years since the iPhone 6, and you had 6 and 6 Plus, 6S, 6S Plus, 7, 7 Plus. And then with the iPhone 8 and 10, you had the, you know, same speed on all the phones, but you've got iPhone 8 and iPhone 8 Plus, and you have iPhone 10. And they use that to say the 10 is generations ahead of what the 8 is in terms of certain specs about it, you know, which felt right. And then this year we have 10S plus 10S Max for the first time because they got a bigger version of the 10. And then there's this entry-level iPhone XR, which is to replace the iPhone 8. And that also feels right. It's like a modified version of the 10 in all three scenarios. It's just different, you know. It's like 10S, so it's like specs improved, 10S Max bigger, and the specs are improved. And then 10R is like, you know, another revolution of the 10 in different ways. Just taking all that and just kind of shuffling it up and saying, now we've got iPhone 11 and iPhone 11 Pro. It's way more clear which is both premium and entry level because, you know, the XR is not cheap. So it isn't like, you know, saying like 5C or anything like that, or like light or air. It's premium. So if you just call it iPhone 11, it is an upgrade, clearly, but it's not the most expensive phone you can get. And then you go to the Pro. And even if the Pro phone is smaller in the screen size, you get that it does something different than the 11 does. And in this case, it doesn't have to be like it's got ProMotion on the screen, or it's got more RAM, or it's got, you know, different specs, even though it will have a different camera, that's enough to say pro. But even just the fact that it costs $200 more because of the material and the screen type and everything, like that's fine. And then I think you probably do, use Max. When you say iPhone 11 Pro Max, I think that's fine because it is the bigger version of that. And you don't have to go to 11S and 11S Pro Max if you make a big change next year. You know, you can jump to 12 if you want to, or do whatever you want. I'm not sure that Apple will ever. I don't think Apple will ever say just iPhone, or just say iPhone and iPhone Pro. I think that's too removed from how much they rely on the marketing, for iPhones, and where they can do it on the Mac and the iPad. It's just not the same business and the same scale. But for this, it seems totally believable, and it's in many ways more sane than 10R and 10S and 10S Max.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Like, if you go, there's a kind of running theme of this whole year has been Apple struggling to correctly market and position the iPhone XR next to the iPhone XS, right? And we've seen multiple revisions to their copy and the website changes, where before it was just like, here's the new iPhone, it's great. And then they added, they had like three sentences of description, and then they moved on again from that when the trade-ins came in. Like, so much tumult and continuous evolution, because clearly they got the branding wrong straight out of the gate, where it was very ambiguous, and even like Apple didn't really know how to position the lineup properly. Like, in September 2018, Apple would basically hide the fact that the iPhone XR has the longest battery life of all the phones, right? It was a fact, but it wasn't stamped on the front page, and it wasn't a big spec of theirs. They just kind of like secretly said it. And, you know, off 3 months later, that's their like number one feature now, the iPhone XR. They even run TV ads that just say, this iPhone lasts all day. It's the longest battery life in an iPhone ever, iPhone XR. And clearly the 10R, 10S designation was not working out for them. And for me, you know, just going to iPhone and iPhone 11 Pro is so much cleaner and so much clearer. That if you go on the Apple website today and you look at the differences, they'll talk about the battery life and the colors for the iPhone XR, and then the way they describe the 10S is, quote, the ultimate iPhone, right? And that phrasing is, you know, perfectly symbolized by the word Pro. So if you're going to iPhone 11 and iPhone 11 Pro, it makes like perfect sense to me.
In the way that Apple uses Pro, like not with Mac Pro, where it's, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in some scenarios, but in the way that they have iPad and iPad Pro, where it's more like, you know, it can be similar generations, but it's got something nicer about it that's not meant for everybody. And the same with you know, arguably MacBook Pro. Like they'll use lower end, like they do have high end MacBook Pros, but they also have got medium and low end MacBook Pros that are also very consumery, you know, for students.
Yeah, like the 13-inch MacBook Pro is 100% a consumer product, but it's in specs and in appeal when people buy it, right? Like, the Air is obviously key for university and student education, but loads of people buy 13-inch MacBook Pros as well. And, you know, just because it's got Pro in the main doesn't mean you have to be a professional. And Apple doesn't need any justification on specs, like, oh, it must have a ProMotion display now because they got Pro in the name. Like, it's just like stupid. It's like fussing over what does S mean in 10S. Like, it's just a name, right? Like, and it's a designation of, this is the model that we think everyone's going to buy, and this is the model that's more expensive and slightly more premium and slightly nicer, right? And the iPhone XR is the most popular iPhone by a mile, right? Like, the iPhone XR sells more than the XS and the XS Max combined. So by that designation alone, it makes its way to be just iPhone 11 and not iPhone 11C or iPhone 11R or, you know, any other weird number on it. Clearly, it's the most popular iPhone. It fits in, you know, what used to be the standard iPhone in price point, like the $600, $700 level, $749, right, starting out. Compared to the iPhone XS, which is, you know, 1,000 and up. So going to iPhone 11 and iPhone 11 Pro is great. It's like, right, everyone in the world, you just buy the iPhone 11. If you've got the money and you like the pretty, you know, that you like the nicer materials, and maybe you like the screen technology, or maybe you really, really want the triple camera, you get iPhone 11 Pro. And it will come out and no one will blink an eyelid, like, I'm not an actual pro, I don't want this one. It's like, if I've got the money for it, I'm going to get that one because it's cooler, right? It's as simple as that. It doesn't matter about, you know, Apple Pencil being there or not. And there was another rumor this month about the iPhone 11 supporting the Apple Pencil, which again, I think is never going to happen, or at least not going to happen this year. And it's certainly not going to be, the 10-inch, you know, Apple Pencil that you use with your iPad is just going to work with the phone, because that's just ridiculous. Like, it like dwarfs the size of the phone. It's just stupid. You don't need an Apple Pencil separation. You don't need I mean, I'd love to have ProMotion iPhones, but I don't think it's going to happen this year, especially not on the OLED ones, which are meant to be the Pro ones, because we've seen Apple do it on LCD. We have not seen them do it on OLED. And if you look at the market, there aren't really OLED high frame rate screens, you know, on the market in terms of phones at the moment either. So it's probably not going to happen there. You just need a very clean definition of this is the iPhone everyone should get. And that's the new iPhone XR essentially. And here's the iPhone that if you have the extra money and you want to be a bit cooler and you want to take advantage of the new triple camera system, you buy this one, you pay more, and you get a nicer casing and everything like that. Like, it's so much better than XS, XR, and I think it's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think 8 and 10, you know, even with the whole skipping 9 thing and using a Roman numeral 10, felt right for what it was, because the 8 felt like the same, you know, generation as the 6, 7, you know, 6 and 7 phones. So it was 8. And it let you know that if you want, like, the phone of the future, as you like to call it, that's the 10. And then last year, it really was murky. Like, you know, everyone gets the impression that all iPhones cost $1,000 now, but then there's a secret one called the XR that does not. And it's just, it costs $250, less than $1,000. So yeah.
And what does R stand for? You know, it doesn't matter. Right. And what does Pro mean? It doesn't matter. Yeah. It's just a Pro one.
But names are important enough that when they get it wrong, it has effects. When they get it right, it can help out a lot. It's not that they'll never sell an iPhone if they call it something bad, like iPhone dumb. But, you know, if they do get the name right, it can have positive effects. And, so I think this makes sense. And, you know, kudos to Coin, as his handle is on Twitter, for being the first to surface this. I think it's very believable.
And we won't have the X10 confusion this year, which is nice.
Yeah, X for 10 is important in Apple's history, but I don't know that they've got, well, besides, like, you know, Mac generations and, you know, ancient history, and I don't know that they've done, like, multi-number Roman numeral like that, like, where, you know.
Yeah, it's not going to be Roman numeral 11, no way.
Yeah, I think there's no chance of that. Whereas with 10, they do it all the time, and that's special to them. So that's why they did then. So we'll finally be able to, people calling it X or 11, you know. And they do, the name means enough to people that want to upgrade annually. Like, whenever the iPhone 4S came out, people were waiting for an iPhone 5 after the iPhone 4. And when they called it a 4S, everyone knew, oh, that's not the major next iPhone, like the big upgrade. That's going to be the next year's iPhone. And that, you know, was true in some ways. By calling it 11, it's the same reason they didn't call the iPhone 8 the 7S. Like, it does help to use that marketing name to say we're, you know, regardless of the specs, this is ahead of the phone before.
Yeah, and it will look different in some ways.
Yeah, in some way it'll have the beautiful camera mounted on the back. What do you? Well, so there's another thing this week, which is that people are making fun of this, but there's an analyst saying that all three iPhones will be released in September this year.
Yeah, there was. I think it was a Webbush analyst who said supply chain checks indicate that all three iPhones will be released within September.
Yep.
And I even said this on Twitter. If you look at the financial statement for the just gone quarter, and they predicted higher than expected guidance right for September, for me I was like, well, that probably means they're releasing all three at the same time, because otherwise it'd be like, if they're selling flat iPhone sales otherwise, and then suddenly like, oh no, we're actually going to have higher guidance than everyone expected, it heavily implied to me they were going to do all three at once. And it seems like they're going to do that.
Yeah, and a lot of reaction has been, duh, that happens every year. But no, there's an iPhone event every year. But for the last 2 years in a row, there's been one iPhone in September and then one in October and November, right? And this year, if we get all three tiers at the same time, that will be news. And so,
yeah, they've never released three flagship iPhones at the same time before.
Yeah, they've done
2017
two.
Was the first, and that was iPhone 8 in September, iPhone 10 in November. And then last year, it was iPhone 10S and 10S Max in September, and iPhone 10R at the very end of October. Mm-hmm. So this would be the first time that you have all three models go on sale simultaneously.
Yeah, so you've had the entry level first, and then the premium one later, and then you've had the premium one first and the entry level later, but now we'll have all three, which is like the days of iPhone 6 and 6 Plus, that those came together, but these are very different phones in that way. So this now we'll have them all together. And there was indication that, like, with the XR launch, that It wasn't like false. They weren't faking it to make it come later. They were doing it as fast as they could. And I think there were indications and it also helped the fact that, why couldn't they have done this one before? Because they did it as soon as they could. So, I'm on board with that. And it is news that we'll have all three this year in September if that happens. And there's another story that the iPad Pro, this is separate from iPhone rumors, but the iPad Pro could have the same camera module or similar as the iPhone 11 rumors have, where it's a big mound and has multiple cameras for the first time. And we've not yet seen an iPad with even two cameras.
Apparently it's jumping to three.
Yeah, that would be a first. And this isn't like a Ming-Chi Kuo supply chain rumor. Is it more analyst backed?
It's Mac Attacker.
They've historically they were correct. They were the first to have that the headphone jack goes away, and they've had some other things. They've also had some misses too. So, some misinterpretations of rumors and things like that. But it's just,
silly analysts for sure, right? Like, yeah. At least some.
So more credible than the analyst who says that Apple Pencil, the bank analyst who says that Apple Pencil is coming to the iPhone this year. So more credible than that.
Yeah. On the Apple Pencil thing, I'm pretty sure Kuo or Bloomberg would have already said that was happening by now, if it was happening.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Let's talk about the Mac App Store change that happened today.
Yeah, this is kind of like a funny... It's almost insignificant in the scheme of things, but I think it's interesting. For both Mac apps and iOS apps, obviously now you have the Today tab in the App Store app, which is Apple curated editorial where they feature apps, app of the day, game of the day, these lists, these best ofs, all of that content that they release literally on a daily basis, up to now has basically been confined inside of the native App Store clients, right? You go into the App Store, you see the content, you're done. You could always share a link to those stories. But when you shared the link and you opened it in like the desktop or on a Windows PC or whatever, it would basically just open a landing page that would say, to view this story, open it on an iOS device. Like, it was just a placeholder, basically. What they've actually rolled out in the last week or so is the full content of those Today editorial stories are now readable on the web. So you share a link to somebody else, they click on it, they don't have to dive into the App Store app or anything. They can just open it in Safari in their browser, and it has all the same images, all the same paragraphs of text and copy, and all the list of the apps featured and stumbling, the same title card on the left. It basically has a design where on the left you get like the card with the icon and the image and the title, and then on the right you have the body content, which is what happens when you like tap through on the actual App Store. Mm-hmm. So they've essentially brought all of that content out of the App Store app now, so it's more readily accessible for people just browsing the internet, which is a nice change, and it kind of like breaks down one of the kind of App Store silos. You still don't have the ability to like see the App Store front page by just going to like appstore.com or anything like that. There's no way to like see the Today feed on the web. You still have to go from the Mac App Store or the iOS App Store and find the tabs and share them. But maybe this is like the first step in that path. And especially as Apple, pushes services narratives, I think we've seen a renewed focus on their kind of web experiences this year. So, a more fully fledged App Store experience on the web, maybe even one where you can, I know this is a crazy thought, actually download and buy the apps, right, from the web as well, which is something that the Google Play Store has done for eons at this point. Like, you're on your Mac, you want to download an iOS app for your phone, you shouldn't have to actually go to your phone to do it. You should just be able to go through the client, whether it's inside of the Mac App Store app or whether it's, just through apps.apple.com on the web, find an app, press buy, and have it automatically appear on your phone. Like, mm-hmm. That's still not there, but hopefully this is like the first stepping stone towards it, because if you look at like the podcast experience, back in April, they upgraded the podcast's web client with like actual playback. They gave it like a more fully fledged experience, where before it was just a directory listing and you again say open an Apple Podcasts. And now it actually lets you listen to episodes on the actual page. So mm-hmm. I feel like we've actually seen Apple pay more attention to its web properties this year. And I hope that there's more to come in that area. I know a lot of people want like Apple Music on the web, which I think is an inevitability. It's just a matter of when. And the reason it's going to happen is because Spotify has one and Apple wants to kill Spotify into the ground. So to be competitive, especially on Windows, right, as Apple fades out interest into iTunes, they kind of need a substitute. And obviously the Mac's getting the music app. But I think they're going to have like a web client as well at some point in the future. Mm-hmm. And the App Store change now is like a very, very small step into expanding the online App Store experience, but it's a welcome one nonetheless.
Yep. Every time a developer would have their app featured in the Mac App Store, they'd want to share it, you know, of course. And you could share a link, but it would open the Mac App Store and it just didn't feel the same as like a web page, like having a URL that goes to somewhere on the web. You know, doesn't interrupt your workflow and you can read it anywhere. So yeah, I think at minimum, this is just a response to that. And you're going to have those complaints stop because now they fixed the problem there. But it would be nice if it's part of a bigger trend, like you describe. I've got one more thing to add about the iOS beta I just discovered. It's very warm when I'm recording. And for the first time in iOS 13 beta, I can set my temperature to 70 even. In the past, it's always...
You're going to need to explain this because this is funny. Yeah.
In the past, the thermostat control, which is redesigned...
In the home app.
In the home app, has... it's been limited to 69 or 71, but you could never hit 70 even, which is like my preference for like cool.
It's basically like an arced slider, right? And you
right.
can like slide it between. And for whatever reason, it wouldn't stay on 70. It would just skip between 69 and 71.
And I even have an automation for when I go to bed to have the temperature go to 70 for like my sleeping temperature. And with my Echo Bee thermostat, the way it would interpret the iOS 13 change, which manages the automation, is that it would do 71. So it could have chosen either one, but it chose 71. As of beta 7, for the first time, I can do 70 even. So they're tuning things up here, Mayo. one more thing on the iPhone story, too, this week. Someone had just asked me in a DM on Twitter if we think that, or if I think that the 10R will go away whenever the new iPhones are released, whenever it is revved to this cycle. And my response was probably, what do you think about that? You know, like with the iPhone 10 to 10S, the 10 did go away from Apple. You can buy it elsewhere, of course, that's always the case. But they discontinued the 10. The 8 stayed in the lineup, and then you had the 10R and 10S. What do you think happens to the 10R and 10S whenever there's iPhone 11 and iPhone 11 Pro, maybe Pro Max?
Oh, that is a good question.
Right?
Yeah. I'm inclined to say that the 10R, as we know it today, will stay around. And I think that's going to be around for a while, kind of like almost becoming an iPhone SE down the road. Like,
okay,
this is the one that sticks around for ages.
Yeah. But maybe only in like one color, like black.
Yeah, and maybe only in certain markets, right? Like sure. India and stuff like that. Yeah. Because the iPhone XR is clearly designed to be able to be made cheaply, even more cheaply than what Apple sold it at, right? I think they've pretty margined that model, if I'm being honest. And that will definitely be able to go further and further down the line for a long time. It can be an LCD iPhone that has Face ID, and they can just keep pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. So I would say the XR stays around. Whether the XS models stay around, that's harder to say. I put it this way. I'd say it's more likely that the XR stays around than the XS stays around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could see all of them going away, or at least one color of the XR remaining for the reasons you explained. Because it is, like, they did keep the 8, and they do have a knack for having last, like, a version of last year's phone around for price reasons. So that would make sense. I don't think, because the XR replacement has rumored changes to the color options, you know, then I don't think they'd have, like, if you want a blue phone, then you get that to get last year's phone, because this year we're not doing that color. That would be bad.
So, they could just keep black and white.
Yeah. Which we've seen them do before. They get rid of gold or something, you know, to keep a color phone around. Cool. That's a good question.
What do you think?
I mean, my response was to the person was that I think that all the XRs would go away, but I hadn't considered just limiting one color and having that stick around. So, but if much of the appeal of the XR is the colors, then effectively it goes away for a lot of people that are interested in that. If they wanted a colorful phone, then you need to go to the 11 to get that option. And that's a pretty good marketing, technique is to remove the appeal of that phone being the colorful options, you know, because if it's just black or white, then it's nothing special, you know, even though those are two of the colors this year. I think.
What about XS? What do you think on XS?
I can't see XS sticking around. It feels like the class of 10 where they took away 10. You can buy it from other retailers, but Apple doesn't sell it directly. Because you don't want to hit it. You don't want to, you know, what do you do? Knock off $100 or so. You don't want to eat into the 11 sells that, or 11 Pro sells that way, if that were the case. So.
Yeah, I think the XS probably goes away, so with the Max, obviously. And then XR, well, it's $749 now. Maybe it goes to like $650 or maybe even $600. Like, you know, actually be pretty aggressive with it. And then that they can use that as their like emerging market phone for a while. It's easy to think that cybercrime is something mysterious that happens to other people. It's easy to feel like no one wants your data, but you'd be mistaken. Your privacy is always under attack. When the internet connection is unencrypted, your data is being transferred over the air and in the open. You can't see it with your eyes, but unencrypted network traffic can easily be read by unscrupulous actors as if it was written on a poster on the wall. Take back your privacy with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN secures and anonymizes your internet browsing by encrypting your data and hiding your public IP address so no one can see what you're doing. To enable ExpressVPN, it just takes one click. Download the app, click to connect, and boom, you're protected. ExpressVPN uses cutting-edge technology called Trusted Server to make sure that no one can keep logs of what you're doing online. It has easy-to-use apps that run seamlessly in the background of your computer, phone, and tablet. You can get up and running for less than $7 a month, and your purchase comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. One subscription applies to every device you own, from Macs to iPhones to iPads, even Android phones, home routers, and other devices too. Use ExpressVPN to serve public Wi-Fi without fear of being snooped on and keep your personal data private. ExpressVPN also creates an internet without borders, defeating content restrictions for online media, music services, and more by masking your real IP address wherever you are in the world. ExpressVPN has 24/7 human support to help you get up and running. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 months free at expressvpn.com/happyhour. That's expressvpn.com/happyhour for 3 months free with a 1 year package. Visit expressvpn.com/happyhour to learn more.
I want to ask you this because of your developer background. What's this story from The Information saying that Apple and Spotify are negotiating Siri support in iOS 13 for their music service? Because there's something to it that's development related, right?
Yeah, this is kind of murky in that iOS 13 fantastically adds a SiriKit domain for audio content. And that can be podcasts, audiobooks, or music. And a third-party app can integrate this new SiriKit API and essentially have the same experience inside of Siri that you can get with Apple Music or Apple Podcasts today. And that was not possible before. And I was railing against it for a while, and a lot of other people were too, and that Apple kind of closed off the API, or they didn't release it, you know, sooner. And everyone was doing these stupid workarounds where it's like, register a shortcut for every single album you have and every single podcast you own, and then you can play it when you say that. But obviously that comes with all the downsides of shortcuts, where it's only listening for exact phrase matches. So if you didn't say it exactly the same, it wouldn't work, and you had to register it in advance. And a big load of mess, right? A big load of hacks. So in iOS 13, they're doing it properly. Apple is letting developers implement a SiriKit API like you could do before for messages and reminders and to-dos and all of that, but for music and podcasts and those kind of apps. So anyone can implement that API, submit an update with iOS 13, ship it, and customers can use it, assuming the API works. And it seems, and I've done a review, I've done like a look over of all the stuff they're offering for it, and it seems pretty well full-featured, like you play music, all of that stuff. And so Spotify, without needing, you know, Apple approval or Apple like special interest or a deal, right, could implement the API and ship it, and it would let them have an experience where you activate Siri and you say, play my playlist from Spotify, or play Taylor Swift on Spotify, or Spotify Ed Sheeran, like all of those kind of commands that you can ask Apple Music today on Siri, you could do with Spotify too. What The Information seems to be saying is that Apple and Spotify are negotiating over this behavior. And so it seems like Spotify wants something more that is currently not provided, or they want special treatment or something else. And so the only things I can think of are, one, Apple is offering like technical support for Spotify to get this up and running. And that is a thing that Apple has relationships with big companies where they help them actually get the APIs implemented to actually work, right? Because especially for something like the SiriKit Media API, it's brand new and it's quite expansive in terms of its like service area. So there's definitely like a thing where Apple could be negotiating a relationship where they, you know, they like send an engineer to Spotify's headquarters for a month and help them get the feature out the door. That could be what a negotiation means. Two, Spotify could be arguing about the default app situation, which would still be a limitation. So with Apple Music, Siri considers all of the Apple apps as like priority number one. So if you don't say, you don't have to say play Taylor Swift on Apple Music for it to play Taylor Swift using the music app, right? But the way SiriKit works, you know, across all the domains is that if it's a third-party app, because all the Apple apps rank first, to specify and disambiguate, you'd have, as a user, you'd have to say play Taylor Swift on Spotify. Like, you have to include the app name for it to send it to Spotify and not mm-hmm. send it to the music app. So, and what everybody wants, again, is a big feature. You know, Spotify wants this, users want this, everyone wants this, is like a screen in settings where you can change the priority ordering of all of these different categories of apps so that if you just said play Taylor Swift, it would go directly to Spotify and not to Apple's apps. Mm-hmm. Same with podcasts, same with everything else. Music, web browsers, mail, all of that stuff, right? So they could be negotiating over Apple adding that option.
Yep.
And maybe Spotify saying, oh, we're going to make another big stink with the FTC and the European Commission, Competition Commission, if you don't do this. Because you've already done like one step, well, not the second step. And then the third thing that they could be negotiating over is HomePod support. And obviously the HomePod support SiriKit requests for, you know, several different categories from like phone calls or messages and all that sort of stuff. And they will relay through the phone, but you don't have to use Apple's apps. You can use third-party apps and it will just SiriKit, you know, through the phone and do it. For the media API, it is not yet clear if it will be supported for relay of personal requests through the HomePod. I have actually asked Apple about this and they refuse to tell me either way. So I'm interpreting that as it's not happening.
Right. Because so if it was, they wouldn't even know.
The HomePod is not compatible with this SiriKit domain. Yeah. Because if it was compatible, I'm sure they'd be singing from the rooftops about it. So that might be the thing that Spotify's still upset about. It's like, you're letting us do it on the iPhone, why won't you let us do it on the HomePod as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people would be happy if you could do that on the HomePod. So it's a win for everyone involved if they do. That makes sense to me. I'll give another update here. We mentioned, I think last week, that there's a Sonos event coming up for the press next at the end of this month. Shortly after that, that happened, much of the, at least one thing from the event leaked, which appears to be the first ever portable Sonos speaker, which is, you know, battery powered for the first time, which will also be the first with Bluetooth. And so the idea there is that they have something for around the house, not just one part of the house, and that can also go outside. And because Sonos speakers going forward, you know, they work with as much as possible. They're also Wi-Fi speakers. That's how Sonos works. Then that would likely mean it's an AirPlay 2 speaker. So this would be the second ever, Wi-Fi Bluetooth speaker that has both Bluetooth and AirPlay 2, Libertone being the first. And Libertone, the knock against that product is that, it's got its own proprietary charging, connector. And a pretty bad wall end of the charger. It can block the ports and everything, and it's pretty big. With the Sonos thing, it's you know, who knows what battery life is like, but I think it can charge from a base that you sit it on, or USB-C, which is a big win. I love USB-C. So we'll see what this actually is when it comes out, but there's been like pretty detailed stuff leaking out about like how it looks and everything. And I think this is all from like regulatory stuff. Yeah, we'll see. I think this is supposed to be shown later this month and like actually shown to the public like early next month. So we'll see what that is. I also finally got around to reviewing the Sonos and IKEA speakers. That's a collaboration that was a long time in the making. And they announced it like 2 years ago that we're going to work on something together. And then they teased it out like a year ago that, hey, we're still going to do this, but we never knew what it was. And they finally announced it, a few months ago as a bookshelf speaker, which kind of looks like what you might guess, and then a table lamp with a speaker in the base of the table lamp, which looks like a HomePod with a lamp on top of it. In my view, so I'm not crazy about the table lamp. I think it's clever that you hide a speaker inside technology or inside like a, you know, furniture. It is a, they are both good speakers and they're both, you know, for what their price. I think the bookshelf one cost $99 and the table lamp cost $179. They've got all the features of most Sonos speakers, in that the only thing missing is voice control. So there's no microphones, which is probably a win for furniture speakers. You know, voice control, but you can control it by voice if you have an Echo nearby or a Google Assistant nearby and you do that. Or you can, with AirPlay 2, which they both have, you can tell Siri and your iPhone to play music on that speaker and it'll beam it from your iPhone to that speaker. So there's something there to it. The thing about the table lamp for me is that it's only a 7-watt bulb, which is very low. And it's got a glass cover over it, which is very pretty, but it's opaque. So also the light doesn't get through it very easily. So it's very much like mood lighting, accent lighting, and not like light up a room. And I don't think it's really pretty either. I think so. It looks like a HomePod, but the cover of it with the HomePod is like a plastic casing over it, really. It looks like fabric. With the IKEA Sonos lamp, it's actually fabric and you can like remove it, like move it around, not remove it, but like make it go up and down, like see the plastic speaker underneath it. It can bunch up, it can get dirty because it's actually cloth, dirty than HomePod would. And it's got a big knob on the side for turning the light on and off. No smart control unless you bring a smart bulb. Then you leave the knob on and then you control it with an app. And it's got play controls on the bottom of the base and it's got a big Ethernet port on it, which is, I think all that goes too far for a lamp that you want to blend in as furniture. It looks like a HomePod lamp, but not like a lamp with a speaker inside.
Yeah, I've seen a picture of it. Obviously, I don't have one, but I wouldn't describe it as a speaker disguised as a lamp. Mm-hmm. I'd describe it as a mini HomePod with a lampshade stuck on top of it.
Yeah, and you can change the lampshade. You supply your own light, so it's whatever bulb you want, but it can't be bigger than the candlelight, you know, candlelight size bulbs, which are very small and very dim. So it's not a knockout. I think they could do a Wi-Fi only version with no Ethernet port. You don't need the knob if you have a switch on the cable on the power cord, like a lot of lamps have. Even if you have like something to where I'm pretty sure you could wire in a way that the switch on the cable only turned off the light and not the speaker itself, because you don't turn off the speaker. And that's not the case now. So that'd get rid of the big ugly knob on the side of it. And I was using it as my bedside table lamp, and the knob is on the, if you're facing it, it's on the right, and that's opposite of where my reach would be. And so I had to angle it, and they're both also, unlike the HomePod, which has, what is it, like speakers all around the sides, right? Like it's in all directions. Mm-hmm. The Sonos and IKEA speakers, they're only meant to put volume out of the front, even though it looks like a HomePod from the lamp. It's totally forward facing, and you can't.
So you'd have to put it against a wall or something.
Yeah. So you can't get around that. And I, because of that, I needed to angle it toward me, you know, as my nightstand table to have it be, you know, low audio, but I can hear it well. So it's a few things about it. Like, I think you could take off the Ethernet port and maybe even the play controls and just require it, you know, have you do it, connect it, control it through the Sonos app or AirPlay 2 or however you're going to use it. And then make the bulb inside bigger than a candlelight bulb. And if you're going to make you supply the bulb, then you could even say, like, you know, encourage the smart bulb if you want to. And if you don't, then you have to power it some other way or turn it off some other way, or maybe do the switch on the cord. So that one was in a knockout, and that's $180. And I got to try the white one or the black one. I like the look of the black one better, but it's not what I received to review. But I'm more concerned about, like, how would that work for emitting light if it's a black opaque glass cover. I'm curious about that one. And then the bookshelf speaker, I think that one is kind of a hit, like a hidden gem, because it's only $99 instead of $179, which is cheaper than any Sonos speaker, you know, on the market otherwise, because they still sell the Sonos Play One, which has no AirPlay 2, but it's the same speaker basically as the Sonos One, which is $200 with AirPlay 2 and microphones. So this one is $100 and it has AirPlay 2. So it's half the price of their other AirPlay 2 speaker, you know, in the lineup. And the size, like, it's pretty tall, but you can have it stand upright or lay flat. You can do a stereo pair, and they sell like $19 mounts to mount two, either one or two on a wall as like a floating shelf, or, you know, just want it to be wall mounted. And, after my, I posted my review, I heard from a lot of people who are already using these as like the backup speakers, their rear speakers for like a 5.1 surround sound setup with Sonos. So, I found that one to be, even though it isn't as interesting to look at, I think it's more attractive and it's easier to blend into, you know, every home. Comes in black or white, and it's half, you know, it's half the price of Sonos's other AirPlay 2 speakers, which is pretty compelling, for a $99 AirPlay 2 speaker. Yep. And last thing I'll say is that it's been a while since I've used Sonos speakers. And so I'm kind of spoiled on like, you know, HomePod with this premium price, admittedly. But the setup process is when I used to be used to, but now it's like you've got to set up Sonos, and then you need to set up your music service with it, and you need to assign it to a room in Sonos, and then if you want to do the Siri voice control on your phone or iPad to say play it in this room, you need to add it to the home app with HomeKit, and there's no barcode, so you've got to be nearby after you've set it up otherwise to make it appear in the home app, and that's really flaky. Probably Apple's fault, but if they had a barcode, it'd be easier. But it was just so many steps to the process to make it work, that it's not like, you know, take it out of the box and it works, especially with a lamp that you got to bring your own bulb for. So, not a ringing endorsement, but definitely an interesting product, especially for the bookshelf speaker, in my opinion. And maybe a second version of the lamp would be a nice thing to take a shot at with some of the criticism taken into consideration. And I also, something in the experience, we had a question from our hashtag Ask95Mac on Twitter, from someone whose handle is at Symphonic Ludwig, and he appears to be the personality of Beethoven on Twitter. And he asked us a couple weeks ago, Apollo Zach and BZA Mayo, do you think Apple will add a way to natively adjust the EQ settings on the HomePod? There's entirely way too much bass for classical music. Seriously, I've been deaf since 1810, and I can still hear the bass on that thing, which I found to be a great way to ask us that question. So kudos for that. That's awesome. I don't know. I mean, they did an EQ for the iPod Hi-Fi, and they did, you know, EQ settings for the, you know, or equal, you can do different modes for like the music app. And so whatever you AirPlay out to the HomePod has that feature, but not with HomePod specifically. So I don't know. I hope they do though, because I also think it can be too bassy if you're concerned about like bass sound. In his case, it's classical music. You know, it's making it sound not the way it's supposed to. If you can just jam them and blur them, I think that the bass response is really awesome. But it's based on what you need and what you can do. But I will say on the Sonos speakers, like the thing that was a victory for those is that they let you control the equalizer. You can control bass settings and treble settings and loudness. And so what I found was that out of the box, it didn't sound the way I wanted them to. But if I turned up the treble setting all the way up with the bass at the mid level default, they sounded really, you know, sounded really good that way. So I don't know if they ever will, but they should. It's much, I don't know. It's the thing, it's like HomePod, like they could do all these things on day one and they haven't. And now we're on like, you know, 1 year out and more. So, and then there's one more ask, and I have my question I want to answer this week, which is from Jason Garrity. He's at Arch Heretic one on Twitter. And he says, what do you think Apple can do to help prevent overusage of technology, which may lead to anxiety or depression? And my answer to this is that they've done a lot of things lately with screen time, not just for parental controls, but for managing your own usage and giving you weekly reports about how many alerts you're receiving, how much you're using your phone or iPad collectively. And then this year they're adding it to the Mac whenever macOS Catalina is released, and those will all come together. I think that's pretty effective. They've done things like, you know, that are debatable, but like night shift, where you change the display color temperature on your phone in the evening to discourage you from using it, or at least make it easier to sleep. And that's debatable whether it's effective or not, but it's something. But you can listen to my 9-to-5 Mac watch time podcast episode with Alex Cox. I think it's episode 3. And I go in the most depth there on my long request for something like mood tracking that requires user input, but something Apple friendly. Where you can just track how you feel over time and have the health app collect that privately, safely, securely. And then over time, you know, you can see correlations with things like how you're eating, sleeping, weather, to how you feel, and then maybe even give resources for things like that. So listen to that episode if you haven't already, Jason. And, I hope that's something they can do in the future in addition to what they're already doing. So I also want to promote, as we go, for the Wafer of the Week, Michael Stever's excellent coverage of the new Apple Aventura store. That's in the Miami area. And he got to see some like behind the scenes things, like, the boardroom specifically, which is like meant for like big business meetings. But he went as press and got to see that. And his photographs are just incredible. The store looks really nice, luxurious. It's in, you know, South Florida, Miami area. So it fits that, theme very well. And, check out that story. We'll have it in the show notes. Also there's a new activity challenge coming up. Which comes, Kyle Seth Gray on Twitter found that first. It's August 25th in honor of the Grand Canyon National Park anniversary. And I think the challenge is to do a 3 mile walk, run, hike, or wheelchair workout. And so that's 4.8 kilometers. So not quite a 5K, but it's a new challenge of this type, right?
Yeah, it's new for once.
So that's cool. And then speaking of Kyle Seth Gray, he was my guest on the latest episode of 9 to 5 Megawatch Time. And we get to talk about his, experience with fitness and participation in that and throughout, you know, school. And then the journey of learning to love workouts and health and fitness with the Apple Watch. So give that a listen. And then I also want to promote, I'm doing a new, piece of writing every week for my state's newspaper, which is called the Clarion Ledger. And so I'll have a link in the show notes there for the first story I wrote, which is about screen time and family sharing. And so that's a big, honor to be able to do. And then, finally, thanks to everyone for sending in those hashtag Ask9to5Mac, questions. We really appreciate them. We'll get some more of those in the future, as time permits. And, in the meantime, keep those coming. We really appreciate those. And the last thing I'll say is that my son Rory is turning 2 this weekend. So it's a nice milestone. So 2 years since I missed the show for his birth. Well, that is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. You can, follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Apollo Zach Benjamin. You're on Twitter at
BZAMAA.
And you can also email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. And, please give us your feedback on iTunes or Apple Podcasts with a star rating or a review. We appreciate both. Subscribe so you hear new episodes every week. And if you use Overcast, give us a star. That recommends the show to more people in Overcast. And, as always, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.